ಜಯ ದ್ವೈತ ಚಂದ್ರ ಜಯ ಗೌರಭಕ್ತ ವೃಂದ ಓಂ ಜ್ಞಾನತಿಮಿರಂಧಸ್ಯ ಜ್ಞಾನಾಂಜನಶಲಾಕಾಯ ಚಕ್ಷೂರೋನ್ಮಿಲಿತಂ ಯೇನ ತಸ್ಮೈ ಶ್ರೀ ಗುರವೇ ನಮಃ. ನಮಃ ಓಂ ವಿಷ್ಣುಪಾದಾಯ ಕೃಷ್ಣಪ್ರಿಷ್ಟಾಯ ಭೂತಲೆ ಶ್ರೀಮತೇ ಭಕ್ತಿ ವೇದಾಂತ ಸ್ವಾಮಿ ಇತಿ ನಾಮಿನೆ. ನಮಸ್ತೆ ಸಾರಸ್ವತೀ ದೇವೇ ಗೌರವಾಣಿ ಪ್ರಚಾರಿಣೆ ನಿರ್ವಿಶೇಷ ಶೂನ್ಯವಾದಿ ಪಾಶ್ಚಾತ್ಯ ದೇಶ ತಾರಿಣೆ ವಾಂಚಾಕಲ್ಪತರುಭ್ಯಶ್ಚ ಕೃಪಾ ಸಿಂಧೂಭ್ಯ ಏವ ಚ ಪತಿತಾನಾಂ ಪಾವನೇಭ್ಯೋ ವೈಷ್ಣವೇಭ್ಯೋ ನಮೋ ನಮಃ. ಜಯ ಶ್ರೀ ಕೃಷ್ಣ ಚೈತನ್ಯ ಪ್ರಭು ನಿತ್ಯಾನಂದ ಶ್ರೀ ಅದ್ವೈತ ಗದಾಧಾರ ಶ್ರೀವಾಸಾದಿ ಗೌರಭಕ್ತವೃಂದ. ಹರೇ ಕೃಷ್ಣ 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 ಹರೇ ಹರೇ, ಹರೇ ರಾಮ 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 ಹರೇ ಹರೇ. ಹರೇ ಕೃಷ್ಣ. ಸೊ ಟುಡೇ ಇಸ್ ದ ಆಸ್ಪಿಷಿಯಸ್ ಒಕೇಜನ್ ಆಫ್ ದ ಅಪಿಯರೆನ್ಸ್ ಡೇ ಆಫ್ ಶ್ರೀ ನಿತ್ಯಾನಂದ ಪ್ರಭು. ನಿತ್ಯಾನಂದ ಪ್ರಭು ಕೀ ಜಯ. ಸೊ ಐ ವಿಲ್ ಸ್ಪೀಕ್ ಆನ್ ದ ಟಾಪಿಕ್ ಆಫ್ ದ ರಿಲೇಷನ್ಶಿಪ್ ಬಿಟ್ವೀನ್ ನಿತ್ಯಾನಂದ ಪ್ರಭು ಆ್ಯಂಡ್ ಶ್ರೀ ಗೌರಾಂಗ ಮಹಾಪ್ರಭು, ಎಸ್ಪೆಷಲಿ ಇನ್ ಟರ್ಮ್ಸ್ ಆಫ್ ಹೌ ನಿತ್ಯಾನಂದ ಪ್ರಭು ಆ್ಯಸ್ ದ ಆದಿಗುರು ಗ್ಲೋರಿಫೈಸ್ ಮಹಾಪ್ರಭು, ಹೌ ಹಿ ಸರ್ವ್ಸ್ ಆ್ಯಂಡ್ ಗ್ಲೋರಿಫೈಸ್ ಮಹಾಪ್ರಭು. ಸೊ ವಿ ಹ್ಯಾವ್ ದ ಫೇಮಸ್ ಸಾಂಗ್ ನಿತಾಯಿ ಪದ ಕಮಲ ಕೋಟಿಚಂದ್ರ ಸುಶೀತಲ. ದಿಸ್ ಫೋರ್ ವೇಸ್ ಐ ವಿಲ್ ಎಕ್ಸ್ಪ್ಲೇನ್ ಇನ್ ಟರ್ಮ್ಸ್ ಆಫ್ ಆ್ಯನ್ ಅಕ್ರಾನಿಮ್ ಪದ. ಸೊ ವಿಲ್ ಡಿಸ್ಕಸ್ ಫೋರ್ ಬ್ರಾಡ್ ಪಾಯಿಂಟ್ಸ್. ಸೊ ಪದ, ಹೌ ಡಸ್ ಹೀ ಗ್ಲೋರಿಫೈ ಲಾರ್ಡ್ ಚೈತನ್ಯ? ಸೊ ಪಿ ಇಸ್ ಹಿ ಪರ್ಸ್ಯೂಸ್ ದೋಸ್ ಹೂ ಆರ್ ದ ಮೋಸ್ಟ್ ಫಾಲನ್ ಆ್ಯಂಡ್ ಹಿ ರೀಚಸ್ ಔಟ್ ಟು ದೆಮ್ ಆ್ಯಂಡ್ ಡೆಲಿವರ್ಸ್ ದೆಮ್ ಇನ್ ಆರ್ಡರ್ ಟು ಗ್ಲೋರಿಫೈ ಮಹಾಪ್ರಭು. ದೆನ್ ಹಿ ಎ ಇಸ್ ಅಬೈಡಿಂಗ್ ಬೈ ಡಿಫಿಕಲ್ಟ್ ಇನ್ಸ್ಟ್ರಕ್ಷನ್ಸ್. ದೆನ್ ಡಿ ಇಸ್ ಡೆಮಾನ್ಸ್ಟ್ರೇಟಿಂಗ್ ಫಸ್ಟ್ ಕ್ಲಾಸ್ ಸರ್ವಿಟರ್ಶಿಪ್ ಆ್ಯಂಡ್ ಲಾಸ್ಟ್ ಇಸ್ ಆಕ್ಟಿವೇಟಿಂಗ್ ದ ಟ್ರೆಡಿಷನ್ ಆಫ್ ಗ್ಲೋರಿಫೈಯಿಂಗ್ ಮಹಾಪ್ರಭು. ನಾಟ್ ಓನ್ಲಿ ಡಸ್ ಹಿ ಗ್ಲೋರಿಫೈ ಮಹಾಪ್ರಭು, ಬಟ್ ಹಿ ಇನ್ಸ್ಪೈರ್ಸ್ ಅದರ್ಸ್ ಆಲ್ಸೋ ಟು ಗ್ಲೋರಿಫೈ ಮಹಾಪ್ರಭು. ಸೊ ಪರ್ಸೂಯಿಂಗ್ ದಿ ಮೋಸ್ಟ್ ಫಾಲನ್, ಶ್ರೀ ನಿತ್ಯಾನಂದ ಪ್ರಭು ಈಸ್ ಮೋಸ್ಟ್ ಸೆಲೆಬ್ರೇಟೆಡ್ ಫಾರ್ ದ ಪಾಸ್ಟ್ ಟೈಮ್ ಆಫ್ ದ ಡೆಲಿವರೆನ್ಸ್ ಆಫ್ ಜಗಾಯಿ ಆ್ಯಂಡ್ ಮದಾಯಿ. ನಾವ್ ಇನ್ ದಿಸ್ ಪರ್ಟಿಕ್ಯುಲರ್ ಪಾಸ್ಟ್ ಟೈಮ್ ಐ ವಾಂಟ್ ಗೋ ಇಟ್ ದ ಡೀಟೇಲ್ಸ್, ಬಟ್ ಐ ಲುಕ್ ಎಟ್ ದ ಬ್ರಾಡರ್ ಕಾಂಟೆಕ್ಸ್ಟ್. ದೆರ್ ಇಸ್ ಜನರಲಿ ವೆನ್ ವಿ ವಾಂಟ್ ಅಂಡರ್ಸ್ಟ್ಯಾಂಡ್ ಸಮಥಿಂಗ್ ದೆರ್ ವಿ ಕೆನ್ ಗೋ, ದೆರ್ ಆರ್ ಡೀಪರ್ ಇನ್ಸೈಟ್ಸ್ ಆ್ಯಂಡ್ ದೆರ್ ಆರ್ ಬ್ರಾಡರ್ ಪರ್ಸ್ಪೆಕ್ಟಿವ್ಸ್. ಸೊ ವಿ ಕೆನ್ ಅಂಡರ್ಸ್ಟ್ಯಾಂಡ್ ಸಮಥಿಂಗ್ ಬೈ ಗೋಯಿಂಗ್ ಡೀಪರ್ ಇನ್ ಟು ಇಟ್. ಓಕೆ, ವಾಟ್ ಇಸ್ ದಿಸ್ ಆ್ಯಕ್ಚುಲಿ? ದಟ್ ಈಸ್ ಅ ಡೀಪನಿಂಗ್ ಇನ್ಸೈಟ್. ಬಟ್ ಬ್ರಾಡರ್ ಪರ್ಸ್ಪೆಕ್ಟಿವ್ ಮೀನ್ಸ್ ಓಕೆ, ಹೌ ಡಸ್ ದಿಸ್ ಪರ್ಟಿಕ್ಯುಲರ್ ಇನ್ಸಿಡೆಂಟ್ ರಿಲೇಟ್ ವಿತ್ ದ ಬ್ರಾಡರ್ ಸೋಷಿಯಲ್ ಸಿಚುವೇಶನ್, ವಿತ್ ದ ಬ್ರಾಡರ್ ಕಾಂಟೆಕ್ಸ್ಟ್? ಆ್ಯಂಡ್ ಬೋತ್ ವೇಸ್ ಕ್ಯಾನ್ ಗಿವ್ ಅಸ್ ಅ ಬೆಟರ್ ಅಂಡರ್ಸ್ಟ್ಯಾಂಡಿಂಗ್. ಸೊ ಇಫ್ ಸಂಬಡಿ ವಾಂಟ್ಸ್ ಟು ಬೈ ಅ ನ್ಯೂ ಹೌಸ್, ದೆನ್ ದೇ ಆ್ಯಕ್ಚುಲಿ ವಾಂಟ್ ಟು ಗೋ ಇನ್ಸೈಡ್ ದ ಹೌಸ್, ಲುಕ್ ಎಟ್ ಎವ್ರಿವೇರ್ ಇನ್ಸೈಡ್ ದ ಹೌಸ್, ದಟ್ಸ್ ಗೋಯಿಂಗ್ ಡೀಪರ್. ಬಟ್ ದೆನ್ ದೇ ಆಲ್ಸೋ ವಾಂಟ್ ಟು ಲುಕ್ ಎಟ್ ದ ಲೊಕ್ಯಾಲಿಟಿ ವೇರ್ ಇಟ್ ಇಸ್. ಸೊ ದಟ್ಸ್ ಗೋಯಿಂಗ್ ಡೀಪರ್ ಆ್ಯಂಡ್ ಗೋಯಿಂಗ್ ಬ್ರಾಡರ್, ದೆನ್ ವಿ ಕ್ಯಾನ್ ಗೆಟ್ ಅ ಫುಲ್ಲರ್ ಅಂಡರ್ಸ್ಟ್ಯಾಂಡಿಂಗ್. ಸೊ ಹಿಯರ್ ಐ ವಾಂಟ್ ಬಿ ಗೋಯಿಂಗ್ ಡೀಪರ್ ಇನ್ ಟು ದ ಪಾಸ್ಟ್ ಟೈಮ್. ಐ ವಿಲ್ ಬಿ ಲುಕಿಂಗ್ ಎಟ್ ಇಟ್ ಫ್ರಮ್ ಅ ಬ್ರಾಡರ್ ಪರ್ಸ್ಪೆಕ್ಟಿವ್. ಸೊ ವೆನ್ ಚೈತನ್ಯ ಮಹಾಪ್ರಭು ಹ್ಯಾಸ್ ಸ್ಟಾರ್ಟೆಡ್ ಹಿಸ್ ಸಂಕೀರ್ತನ್ ಪಾಸ್ಟ್ ಟೈಮ್ಸ್ ಇನ್ ನವದ್ವೀಪ್, ಅಟ್ ದ್ಯಾಟ್ ಟೈಮ್ ನಿತ್ಯಾನಂದ ಪ್ರಭು ಕಮ್ಸ್ ಓವರ್ ದೇರ್. ಹೀಸ್ ಬೀನ್ ವೇಟಿಂಗ್, ಟ್ರಾವೆಲಿಂಗ್ ಟು ವೇರಿಯಸ್ ಪ್ಲೇಸಸ್ ಆ್ಯಂಡ್ ವೇಟಿಂಗ್ ಇನ್ ಒನ್ ಸೆನ್ಸ್. ಆ್ಯಂಡ್ ವೆನ್ ಮಹಾಪ್ರಭು ಕಮ್ಸ್ ಓವರ್ ದೇರ್ ಅಟ್ ದ್ಯಾಟ್ ಟೈಮ್, ಸೊ ವೆನ್ ಮಹಾಪ್ರಭು ಸ್ಟಾರ್ಟ್ಸ್ ಸಂಕೀರ್ತನ್, ದೆನ್ ನಿತ್ಯಾನಂದ ಪ್ರಭು ಕಮ್ಸ್ ಓವರ್ ದೇರ್ ಆ್ಯಂಡ್ ದೆನ್ ಮಹಾಪ್ರಭು ಟೆಲ್ಸ್ ಇಸ್ ಅಸೋಸಿಯೇಟ್ಸ್, ನೋ ದರ್ ಇಸ್ ಅ ಗ್ರೇಟ್ ಮಹಾಶಯ ಹೂ ಹಸ್ ಕಮ್ ಹಿಯರ್, ಗೋ ಆ್ಯಂಡ್ ಫೈಂಡ್ ಹಿಮ್ ಆ್ಯಂಡ್ ಬ್ರಿಂಗ್ ಹಿಮ್. ಆ್ಯಂಡ್ ದೆನ್ ವಾಟ್ ಹ್ಯಾಪನ್ಸ್ ಇಸ್ ದಟ್ ಆಲ್ ದೋ ದ ಡಿವೋಟೀಸ್ ಗೋ ಆ್ಯಂಡ್ ಸರ್ಚ್ ಹರಿದಾಸ್ ಅದರ್ಸ್ ಗೋ ಆ್ಯಂಡ್ ಸರ್ಚ್, ಬಟ್ ದೇ ಜಸ್ಟ್ ಕಾಂಟ್ ಫೈಂಡ್ ಹಿಮ್ ಎನಿವೇರ್. ಆ್ಯಂಡ್ ದೆನ್ ಮಹಾಪ್ರಭು ಹಿಮ್ಸೆಲ್ಫ್ ಗೋಸ್ ಆ್ಯಂಡ್ ದೆನ್ ಹಿ ಫೈಂಡ್ಸ್ ಹಿಮ್. ಸೊ what is this significance of this? Now, if you see, something similar happens when Mahaprabhu is at the house of Tapan Mishra, and he says, there is a Vaishnava outside. And he says, there is no Vaishnava outside. Okay, is there someone outside? Bring him inside. And then Sanatana Goswami, who is looking like a fakir, and Mahaprabhu embraces him. And they're stunned, what is going on over here? Who is this person? Why is Mahaprabhu showing so much affection? So the point is that when Mahaprabhu says, okay, there is some special person who has come. Now, if Mahaprabhu is already the leader of the Vaishnavas over there. So if he says there is some special person who has come, then right from the beginning, Mahaprabhu himself is establishing the position of Nityananda Prabhu within his associates. And then his associates go and search for him. Who is the special person which Mahaprabhu wants to see him? And they are not able to find. And when they are not able to find, okay, Mahaprabhu can say, okay, maybe he's not here. But Mahaprabhu personally goes and searches and locates him. So through this, what is Mahaprabhu doing? At one level, it's just a leela. But another level, Mahaprabhu is saying, this person is here so important for me that I am going to personally search and locate. So, you know, if we are staying at a particular place and a special guest comes, then maybe if His Holiness Radha Maharaj is there, he will tell devotees that, you know, okay, special guest, take care of him, go and receive him. But if, say, Maharaj himself goes somewhere to meet that person and to bring that, oh, you are staying here, please come and stay with us, please come here, then we will understand this person is extremely special. So right from the beginning, there is this very sweet reciprocation between Nityananda Prabhu and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. That Chaitanya Mahaprabhu establishes the prime position of Nityananda Prabhu through glorifying him. He's so important that I'll personally go and locate him. Even if you can't locate him, it's not that I'm going to just leave it. Okay, can't be found. And then Nityananda Prabhu also, he wants to glorify Mahaprabhu. So what happens is, he is, when Mahaprabhu has this desire that everybody should chant the holy names. So Nityananda Prabhu is going around with Haridas Thakur, Grihe Grihe Thakur. He's asking different people to chant. And then he hears about Jagayana Madai. People are alarmed and running away from a place. And they ask, what's happening? And he hears that, okay, these people are so fallen, they're so degraded. They are so abominable that nobody wants to be near them. And the Chaitanya Bhagavat describes that Nityananda Prabhu's eyes become excited with compassion. It is not just compassion, it is adventurous compassion. Adventurous compassion means what? And he says, here is an opportunity to glorify Lord Chaitanya. So when he hears about how Jagai and Madai are fallen, the first thought that comes in his mind is, quite often our consciousness is revealed through our first reactions. Now, of course, in one sense, culture means that we are able to restrain or even conceal our first reactions. Say, for example, if we hear that somebody has done something terrible, somebody we thought was respectable, has done something terrible, you say, you know, whoa, this person is just a hypocrite. Now, we may not say that directly, but that may be the first thought that may come. But what is the first, when Prabhupada heard that one of his senior disciples had fallen away, Prabhupada's first, the devotees were shocked. But in Satsuru Maharaj writes, he met Prabhupada and Prabhupada said, Maya is so powerful. So Prabhupada did not blame that devotee. But Maya is so powerful. We all need to be careful. So actually our consciousness is often revealed through our first reactions. So here, when he hears about Jagai and Madai, he is not thinking, oh, they're Brahmanas and how terrible, what kind of abominable deeds they're doing. His first thought is that if they can be delivered, then the glories of Mahaprabhu will spread far and wide. And just as the Puranas glorify Krishna or Lord Vishnu for having delivered Ajamil, similarly, Mahaprabhu will be glorified for having delivered Jagai and Madai. So that he's excited with compassion. And now this is no easy task. Prabhupada would say, shoot the rhino. Do that which is very, very difficult to do. And just to even get that desire to do something so extraordinary, okay, just let's go and deliver them. That desire itself shows how much Nityananda Prabhu's entire being is permeated with the desire to glorify Mahaprabhu. So when we say Yomam Pashyati Sarvatra Sarvam Chamai Pashyati, that Sarvabhuti, the devotee, pure devotee, sees Krishna everywhere, and sees everything in Krishna. No, that is not just an abstract that, okay, we see Krishna behind a tree, or we see Krishna playing a flute. Prabhupada translates in one of his Bhagavatam purports, the word-to-word translation, he says that a pure devotee sees the potential for Krishna consciousness in everyone. And this is what Nityananda Prabhu is saying. So when we are trying to share Krishna bhakti with others, yes, there are many people who may be doing things which are quite terrible right now. Their behavior, their habits, their indulgences may be terrible. But if that's what we focus on, and the default response is condemnation for what they are doing, then there's a lot of work still needed for our Krishna consciousness. He says, oh, now yes, of course we don't have potency anywhere, Nityananda Prabhu, and it's not so easy to deliver to anyone. What to deliver ourselves also is difficult. But still the principle is that he is excited, and he's excited with compassion is an adventure. This is a big challenge. How are they going to be delivered? So in that cultural context, if we see that the Navadvip, from the pure devotional perspective, Chaitanya Bhagavat says that it was so people were so fallen that they would recite the Bhagavatam but not talk about bhakti. That they would chant the names of Vishnu only when they were taking bath during the eclipses. Now, from today's perspective, people are reading the Bhagavatam, we'll say that's also wonderful. So people were cultured overall. You could say they were pious but not devotional. And in such a pious culture, for Jagai and Madai, they were extremely fallen. As of course, we could say they were Lecha rulers over there. They had certain habits which could be similar to what Jagai and Madai had. But for a Brahmana to fall to that level was terrible. But what is Nityananda Prabhu's reaction? Okay, now what an opportunity over here. So this is a devotee's disposition. A devotee whose life is dedicated to glorifying Krishna, they see everywhere the potential for glorifying Krishna. This is Mahaprabhu. The first, Nityananda Prabhu's first thought is, okay, what an opportunity. But then, as I said, this adventure, see, adventure also means danger. Adventure means there's excitement, but the excitement itself means unpredictability. Generally, see, what happens is, we in the conditioned state, what happens? See, we are spiritual beings in the material world. So what happens is, on one side, because as souls we are eternal, we always long for eternity, security, safety. But at the same time, we are not just eternal beings, we are eternal ecstatic beings in a loving relationship with Krishna. So we also, that ecstasy comes through adventure, excitement, dynamic activity. So we have these two longings. Now, dynamism, excitement, adventure, all this involves risk. All this involves danger. See, safety means, okay, this is how things are and this is how things should continue. But adventure means, okay, I don't know what is going to happen next. So in general, we all are pulled between those two things. Do I want safety or do I want adventure? Do I want excitement or do I want peacefulness? The problem is I want both. And the two are contradictory. Now, all of us have our own, you could say, somewhat innate nature. So some people are more safety seeking and some people are more adventure seeking. That is just human nature, broadly speaking. But it is in bhakti that ultimately that our need for security and our need for adventure, both are ultimately fulfilled. Because when we are with Krishna, then what happens is, we are eternal souls, Krishna is eternal, our relationship is eternal. So that security is completely there. But what happens in our relationship with Krishna, every day is a new day in the spiritual world. It is so exciting that devotees don't just walk over there, they dance, they don't just talk, they sing. So that excitement and, you could say, security, they are perfectly fulfilled in the spiritual world. In the material world, however, you know, what happens is, if we seek excitement, then security goes away. If we seek security, then excitement goes away. So when we are trying to do any kind of outreach, we are in our devotee community, there will be some troubles there also, but okay, we are in our community, there's some level of security. But going out to new people, reaching out to them, trying to share Krishna bhakti with them, there's a certain level of uncertainty, unpredictability, adventure in that. So this was Nityanand Prabhu. He is adventurous in his desire to serve, to glorify Mahaprabhu. And generally speaking, when we generally, how important something is for someone, you know, how much somebody is dedicated to someone, how much somebody loves something, that is seen by what is at stake. Now, broadly speaking, when we say that there is love, there is devotion, so love can be seen in two ways. How much we love someone is seen by what we give for that, due to that person, and what we give up for that person. Two things: what we give for that person and what we give up. So if parents love their children, then parents want to give the best to their children, you know, maybe the best education, the best facilities, and what we give up for that person. So the parents want the children to have the best facilities so they can study and have a good career, and they may say, okay, in your home, in your room, we'll put air conditioner, although in our own rooms we will not have air conditioner. So what we give up for them. So love is seen in these two things: what we give and what we give up. So here, Nityanand Prabhu, he could be just in ecstasy with the devotees singing and dancing. And he could also go to pious people and tell them to chant, and they will do it and they'll be happy. But here, what he does is, what is he putting at stake? When he approaches Jagai and Madai, so what is given up? Actually, Nityanand Prabhu, he risks his life. Because Jagai and Madai, they are outlaws in one sense. They are people who are like thugs. They are robbers, they are lawbreakers. And just approaching them, everybody tells them, no, don't go near him, don't go near him. You know, they are not people who will respect the saintly. But they goes over there, risks his life. And okay, risk means there is a possibility of danger. But it was not just a risk of life. What happened thereafter was, actually, Madai took a water, took a liquor pot from which he was drinking, and he hurled it at close quarters. It is, you know, something you throw an object from far away, also it hurts. But it's very close, and Madai was a heftily built person. And he hurled it at Nityanand Prabhu. It hit his head. His head started bleeding, his whole body became covered in blood. So he not only risked, but he actually sustained physical injury. And okay, it's one thing to suffer some loss of the, some physical pain, some physical injury. But even after that, when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came with his chakra, he said, how dare you assault my devotee? I will destroy you. So what did Nityanand Prabhu do at that time? He turned to Mahaprabhu and he prayed to him. No, actually it's just a minor scratch. Don't worry about this. And if at all you feel he has offended, he has sinned, then if I have done any piety, if I have done anything to please you, please, in exchange for that, give me one charity. Please give me the bodies of these two people, Jagai and Madai. So he was ready to wager his own piety. Now, in today's world, many people don't really understand or accept the concept of punya or papa. So this is actually they say, what is wagering one's piety? But actually speaking, in a traditional context where people understand that it's, so when say, I will offer my piety for this, in exchange for this, give me this, what it means is like somebody has invested a lot of money and it's their entire fixed deposit, which is their security for the future, and they're saying, I'm offering this to you. So this is Nityanand Prabhu's compassion. And so he was pursuing the most fallen, going out of his way, not just going out of his way, going in the way of danger, even disaster, for the sake of reaching out to people who would not normally even turn toward Krishna. Srila Prabhupada himself had that similar mood. When Prabhupada went to America, it was inconceivable. There were some other spiritual teachers who had gone to America before Prabhupada, and their lives, they also had faced some challenges. But Prabhupada's challenges were manifold, more than anybody else's. Because Prabhupada was already very aged, he was nearly 70. And Prabhupada was giving a message of bhakti. He was just talking about monastic meditation, peacefulness. There's not much intellectual recalibration that is required for that. There is not much surrender of the heart that is required for that. And hardly anyone else would talk about purificatory disciplines. Prabhupada was going to talk about that also. So when Prabhupada went, it was a great risk. And Prabhupada took that risk. So pursuing fallen souls, not just, it's one thing, those who come to the temple, and we those who come to us and we share Krishna Bhakti with them, that's wonderful. But going after them, Maya Mrugam, the Ipsita Anvadhavad, as it said about Mahaprabhu, that one explanation of that verse, Vande Mahapurushate Charanaravindam. One meaning is that those who are in Maya, Mahaprabhu is running after them. They are running after Maya, and Mahaprabhu is running after them to deliver them. And that running after the conditioned souls to deliver them, that is, Mahaprabhu is doing that primarily through Nityananda Prabhu. So that is Nityananda Prabhu's extraordinary mercy. Now, Nityananda Prabhu delivers people in, there are two main pastimes where he delivers. One is Jagayan Madai, and other pastime is his delivering the thieves. So now, I won't go into, again, as I said, we're not going in deeper, we're looking broader in the pastime. So most of you know the pastime of the thieves where, when Nityananda Prabhu was at the house of Hiranyapandit, Nityananda Prabhu would wear expensive garments with very precious ornaments. And the thieves thought, you know, this is like a one-time lifetime job. one robbery and it's enough for the whole lifetime. So he thought, we'll do this. But again and again they were foiled. First time they just went to sleep. Second time what happened was that they were going and suddenly started raining and suddenly a ditch appeared from nowhere. They fell into it. They felt that they were being bitten by sharp insects which they couldn't even see. It seemed like scorpions or snakes. And then suddenly they became blinded. So for them, in this particular pastimes, there were many miracles that happened. So initially, there were miracles that deformed them. And those indicate Nityananda Prabhu's power, his greatness. You know, even inside, he was just doing ecstatic kirtan. But outside, all this was happening by his power. But even greater is the miracle that transformed them. Nityananda Prabhu as the Paramatma inside the heart of the head of the thieves told him that, okay, why is all this happening to us? Why is this happening? Maybe because this Nityananda Mahashay, he must be God. And with that insight, he offered his life and he surrendered to Nityananda Prabhu. So the miracles that transform the heart of these thieves, that demonstrates Nityananda Prabhu's mercy. So after this, what happened was, this particular, you know, we have youth outreach, we have corporate outreach. So this was robber outreach. So what happened was, he started a robber preaching party. So wherever Mahaprabhu would, when Nityananda Prabhu would travel, he would also travel. Not with Nityananda Prabhu, but separately. And Nityananda Prabhu would go to the house of devotees or go to people who were devotionally minded and inspire them to chant. And he would go to the robbers in that village. And he had been a big name in the circle of robbers. So when he would speak, among robbers, he would have a lot of credibility. So what happened is, he says, I have surrendered to Nityananda Mahashay. And he says, oh, really? Then we should also surrender. He would inspire them. And wherever Nityananda Prabhu would be doing his kirtans, suddenly, the devotees would be ecstatically kirtan, and suddenly, hush would fall on that whole pandal. Why? Because all these local thugs, they would march in. Now imagine if we have ecstatic kirtan going on and some big mafia don suddenly comes in. What's happening over here? Everybody really concerned, even alarmed. So all these big hooligans would come there, and they'd come straight to Mahaprabhu, and the devotees would be terrified, what's going to happen? They'd come to Nityananda Prabhu and then just fall down in Dandavat. And they would offer obeisance to Nityananda Prabhu and surrender their life to him. So this was Nityananda Prabhu's mercy, that, you know, that those who were driven by the desire to rob, by Nityananda Prabhu's mercy, they were robbed of that desire to rob. They were robbed of the desire to rob. So Krishna is glorified as Chauragraganya. He's the greatest of the thieves. That same Krishna, that potency is manifested by Nityananda Prabhu. So reaching out to the most fallen, that is Nityananda Prabhu's way of glorifying Mahaprabhu. Yes, it is. Why is this important? See, because in one sense, you know, I recently gave a class to IIT students preparing for IIT. Earlier they used to go to Kota and places like that, but now it's all virtual. So what happens is there are these big coaching institutes. And they say, from our coaching institute, this many students went into IIT. This many students got into IIS. This many students got into IIM. And they're very proud of that. And that's wonderful in one sense. But if you look at it, even these coaching institutes, like colleges, they have their selection criteria. So they will select only the top candidates. They will select only the brightest students. So you select the brightest students, and then you train them, and then they excel. It's good, you give the training. But suppose you have somebody who had barely scraped through in 10th. And then you have 2-year training, and then that person gets into IIT. That is a miracle. That is the real training institute. So what happens is, similarly what Nityananda Prabhu is doing is, that those who had no spiritual inclinations, those who were like almost spiritual complete failures, not spiritual inclination, you take them and you deliver them. So if a training institute does something like that, you know, those who are failures in 10th, they become IIT students. That will be a phenomenal training institute. So that is Nityananda Prabhu's glory. He pursues the most fallen. So it's like a training institute looking for, going through schools. Okay, who are the dropouts and failures in your school? You bring them to our academy and we'll train them. That is Nityananda Prabhu's extraordinary compassion. And he goes out searching for those souls who are fallen, and he attracts them and he transforms and delivers them. So now, of course, in these two pastimes, there's a small difference in mood. That Jagai Madhai pastime was a thief pastime. In Jagai Madhai pastime, it is more celebrated, because in the thieves pastime, what happens is the thieves who get injured, they become blinded, they fall in the ditch, they are bitten, they are afflicted by the stormy rains and the cold winds. Whereas in Jagai Madhai pastime, it is Nityananda Prabhu himself sustains injury. So his compassion is manifested much more in Nityananda Prabhu pastime. And secondly, in the thieves pastime, the thieves came to Nityananda Prabhu. Even it is an ulterior motive, but they came to him. But with Jagai and Madhai, Nityananda Prabhu went to them. So his compassion is manifested far, far more in the Jagai and Madhai pastime. That's why he is celebrated as the deliverer of Jagai and Madhai. So that is first point of pursuing the most fallen. And second, we'll discuss in the acronym Pada, Nithai Pada Kamala. So Pada, abiding by difficult instructions. So now, the most difficult instruction that Nityananda Prabhu received from Mahaprabhu was eventually to become a grahastha. So Nityananda Prabhu was avdhut. He was renounced and he was detached. Now he had no worldly attachments. At the age of 12, he was barely a child, and he was told to. His traveling sannyasi came to his place, stayed at his parents' place, and told that I want. So Swadhyay Pandit gave Nityananda Prabhu. So he had no attachments. Right from the age of 12, he had been just freely traveling. And then when Mahaprabhu told him that you should reach out to more people. So it's one thing for adventurous purposes to go and approach fallen people. That is one thing. But actually, to change one's ashram itself, that requires a far greater sacrifice, far greater commitment. If you see Nityananda Prabhu, Avadhut was like a free spirit. And the renounced ashram, and not just renounced ashram, but he was like renounced completely free, is Avadhut, above the rules. So that was what naturally suited him. But for him to abide by Mahaprabhu's instruction, that was not easy. But he accepted that. Why? Because Mahaprabhu felt that by this, he'll be able to reach out to more people. And Nityananda Prabhu did that. So Nityananda Prabhu demonstrates that, in one sense, that actually bhakti and seva can be performed in many different ways. It is not that there's only one way to perform seva. There are many different ways in which one can reach out to share Krishna bhakti with others. So Prabhupada told George Harrison, no, you don't have to join the temple. At that time, that was radical advice. Because at that time, becoming a devotee meant moving into the temple. There's no other definition of becoming a devotee. You know, if you are not moving into the temple, then the idea is actually, okay, you may be practicing bhakti of some kind, but you're not a devotee. Ravindra Swarupuru has written an article about how actually congregation preaching started in our movement. So he said that when we were preaching, the definition of making devotees was getting people to move into the temple. But Indians were coming to our programs, but Indians, mostly who had immigrated from India to America, they had very little intention of moving into the temples. So initially when they would come, we would preach to them. But after some time, we said, oh, they are not going to become devotees. They are already devotees, but we think they are not going to become devotees. So we would pay no attention to them. So he said it was such an ironic situation. They were coming week after week after week after week, regularly come for programs. And if some outsider would have asked these people, you know, which religious group do you belong to? He said, we are Hare Krishnas. But if somebody had asked us, he said, they are not Hare Krishnas. So the idea at that time was that you have to move into the temple to be a devotee. Otherwise, you're not a devotee. But it's only after years went on and book distribution as a service couldn't go on because of various reasons. They said, oh, these are people who are coming. They are ready to help us. They are our people. They are devotees. So that dimension that actually somebody, that you can be devotees staying outside and having one's own family and career and social life, but still having a serious spiritual life, that conception was not there. So Prabhupada telling George Harrison was radical. So similarly, it is when Radhanath Maharaj told Ghanshyam Priya Prabhu, Jai Shakti, he was in the ashram. You know, you can do so much more. You go out. And now he has become a big motivational speaker. And he's sharing Bhagavad Gita at a subtle level with many people. So seva can be done in many different ways. So Mahaprabhu to Nityananda Prabhu, this was not easy for him to do. But he accepted that. And that is his glory. Now, so when Nityananda Prabhu would reach out to extremely fallen people. So Chaitanya Bhagavat says that even if he goes to a bar or a brothel, Nityananda Sakur says, I know that he is going there not for indulging, but for benedicting, blessing those who are indulging over there. He is not going there to a bar to get drunk, but he is going there because he is already drunk with love of Krishna. And he wants to share that intoxication with others. So this is something which Mahaprabhu as a sannyasi would not have been able to do. Mahaprabhu was a sannyasi, he was transcendental, but at the same time, he strictly followed the rules of sannyas. But he wanted those who would not come to him as a sannyasi, they should also be reached. And Nityananda Prabhu took up that service. So that was a difficult service, but he accepted that. And it was not just that he himself, by entering into the Grahastha Ashram, he reached out to many people. But he also created a legacy through his family. Now, his consort, Jahanvi Devi, she was a very prominent Vaishnavi. And after Mahaprabhu's departure, and after the departure of the first generation of Vaishnavas, most of the first generation of Vaishnavas, that you could say, that not the first generation, the generation with Mahaprabhu, most of them could not bear separation from Mahaprabhu. So Mahaprabhu, after he departed, almost all of them departed in quick succession. And then there was like big void in the Gaudiya Vaishnava tradition. So that void was primarily filled by Jahanuma Devi. So she became a leader. So, and also Nityananda Prabhu's son, Vichandra Goswami, was also a prominent leader in the Vaishnava tradition. So he reached out he shared Krishna Bhakti himself by following Mahaprabhu's instruction of entering the Grihastha Ashram, but he also created a legacy through his family. Now, with this particular aspect, I'll discuss something which is sometimes a subject of controversy, that was Nityananda Prabhu actually a sannyasi?
Mahaprabhu, which was the period he got married actually.
Yeah. I mean, dates I'll have to check. I'm not exactly sure. That's when. Definitely it didn't happen during the time because Mahaprabhu was in Navadvip for a very short time after he started Sankirtan. So it happened afterwards only. That much I can be fairly sure. Okay. Thank you. So there is some controversy that was Nityananda Prabhu a sannyasi? As a sannyasi, from sannyasi, did he become a grahastha after that? The Bhagavatam is quite strong about that kind of change. And now sometimes the word sannyasi is used, but it is used more in a generic sense, not in a technical sense of sannyasashram. So I'll discuss that issue a little bit. It's more of a technical things. So there are some verses which are said to substantiate the idea that he was a sannyasi. And Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur in his writings has analyzed this extensively. So let's look at this. This is a particular verse. That this is, actually this is Chaitanya Bhagavat. Kothaya thakila danda, kotha kamandalu, kothava, vasana gela nahi adimula. This is describing how that where Nityananda Prabhu, when he would get to ecstasy, he would become so ecstatic that where was his danda? Where was his water pot? You know, where were his clothes? He was completely unmindful of all of these. Just completely ecstatic. So some people say that the fact that he had a danda indicated that he was a sannyasi. That he was carrying a kamandalu indicated that he was a sannyasi. But Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur says, not really. He says that danda and kamandalu, in the tradition, it is not that these are carried only by sannyasis. First of all, kamandalu is just it's like a water bottle. Anybody can carry a water bottle for traveling. You need water. But danda, he says, that these are used even by brahmacharis. And he says the brahmachari danda is different from sannyasi danda. Sannyasi danda, at least in the Vaishnava tradition, is a tridanda. The brahmachari danda is made up of different substances. It's Kadira, Palash, or Bamboo. So he says that Nityananda Prabhu had the danda. He was renounced in the sense that he was a brahmachari. He was not a sannyasi. So it's not that official and technical. That, okay, this ashram, from this ashram, this ashram. So, but he just renounced the world and he went to this forest. So in general parlance, even now, if even a young devotee becomes a brahmachari, people say that, oh, the sannyas leliya. You know, but there's a big difference between brahmachari and sannyas. So it says that there is a technical usage of the word sannyas, where that is the fourth ashram, and officially somebody becomes a sannyasi. And there's a generic use of the word sannyas, which means that somebody has renounced the world. So Nityananda Prabhu was a sannyasi. If that word is used ever, it is in the sense that he had renounced the world. But he had not formally taken the sannyas ashram. So another reference is that there is the name Nityananda. So sometimes Ananda, that name, many sannyasis have their name ending with Ananda. So the fact that his name had the name Ananda in his title, that indicates that he was a sannyasi. Some people say that. Well, that was not a sannyas title. So Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur quote the Satvat Samhita and he gives there's a list over there. So there are 108 names of basically suffixes for the titles of sannyasi. He says Ananda is not one among them, certainly not for Vaishnavas. Now, among the Advaitic tradition, they often use Ananda, but that is used as a part of the name. So we have Prakashananda Saraswati and we have Brahma and others like that. So there are sannyasis. So it is the Advaitic tradition, it is used as a sannyasa name. So, but generally the sannyasa, that might be a part of the name, but the actual, according to tradition, that among the sannyasis are having the dashanam. So Tirtha, Ashrama, Vana, Aranya, Parvati, Giri, Sagara, Saraswati, Bharati and Puri. So these are the traditional names of the titles that sannyasis get. So he says that Nityananda Swaroop was his brahmachari name. And it is, Nityananda is how he is referred to. So he never took sannyas. So he was renounced. So Mahaprabhu was in the householder life and he embraced the renounced order. And Nityananda Prabhu was renounced and he embraced the household order. So that you could say dynamism of bhakti. The two primary, Gaur and Nitai, they did dynamically different things, dramatically different things. That is true. So he moved from being renounced to being householder. But being renounced is not being the same as being a renunciate in the sense of technical sense of sannyasi. So he was an avadhut. So he was renounced but not a renunciate. Not a sannyasi in that sense. So it is so in fact, Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur said that it is offensive to think that the Gaudiya tradition, where Mahaprabhu exemplified sannyas to such a high degree, that Mahaprabhu would actually instruct someone to give up sannyas. That is something which is not done in the tradition. Now, of course, Prabhupada was again very compassionate, and his focus was not whether somebody says a sannyasi or not, but whether somebody practices bhakti or not. So even sannyasis, if they couldn't continue sannyas, they were encouraged to practice bhakti. That is Prabhupada's compassion. But that is not what happened with Nityananda Prabhu. It was, in one sense, he was a brahmachari, he was an avadhut brahmachari, and he became a grahastha. Even as a grahastha, also he was an avadhut grahastha. You know, he was, in one sense, above the rules of grahasthashram. So this is Nityananda Prabhu. It was a difficult thing to do. See, even now, 500 years down the line, there is, among some circle, there is this controversy. How could sannyasi become a grahastha? So at that time, how much more could have been the controversy? But Nityananda Prabhu didn't care for that. Although, for somebody who is renounced to become a grahastha, there could have been some controversy associated with that. But he considered that this is what Mahaprabhu wants me to do. This is what I will do. This is for the service of Mahaprabhu. So that is, sometimes difficult instructions are required to be done for carrying forward the mission. And Nityananda Prabhu demonstrates that sacrificing spirit. It's ready to do difficult things for the service of the Lord. So that is the second part. So PA. Then we'll discuss D, that is Pada D, that is, he is demonstrating first class servitorship. So first class servitorship means what? That there is, Prabhupada talks about these three levels of servitors. And he says third level is somebody is given instructions but they don't follow. So that is defiance, that is disobedience, that is not good at all. The second level servant is, this is what you are told and that is what they do. It's good, but they stick to the letter of the law. But the first level servant is that they fulfill the spirit of the instructions, even if it has to go against the letter of the instructions. So it is, you could call it, sometimes it may call it as disobedience, but it is not so much disobedience as transcendence to obedience. That somebody is, there is obedience, which is important, but go beyond that to fulfill the purpose of that. So here, first class servitor means not just that this is the instruction, follow it, but why is this instruction given? And how can that purpose be fulfilled? So that is what he focuses on. So for example, Srila Prabhupada was told by his Guru Maharaj that preach in the Western world, share Krishna Bhakti in the Western world. And Prabhupada, with great courage, at great risk, went to the West and did that. But if we see from the 1970s onwards, Prabhupada spent majority of his time in India. He was personally invested in outreach in India. And he brought devotees from the West to do outreach in India. And why was that? Because Prabhupada one time told Tamal Krishna Maharaj, not just once, but several times also he told different devotees that, my Guru Maharaj wanted me to preach in the West. Now you do that. I want to preach in India. Now we say, why is he doing something which his Guru Maharaj doesn't want? Is he defying his instructions? Not at all. He felt that his followers, they were already from a Western background and they were highly, highly inspired. So they would continue Western outreach and he would regularly travel. He traveled 14 times in 11 years across the world. So he was there to inspire them. But Prabhupada felt that actually to fulfill What is Bhakti Sanskar Thakur's mission? It is not just that go to the West and preach and make some best friend people into devotees. It is create a global community, a global movement of bhakti. And if that global movement of bhakti is to be sustained, if there is to be infrastructure for sustaining it for many generations, then the foundation for that has to be in India. In India, this pious culture is already there. So in India, especially in Mayapur and Vrindavan, we need to have places where devotees from all over the world can come and become spiritually rejuvenated. And so Prabhupada was not rejecting the instruction, not neglecting the instruction, but was looking beyond the instruction to the purpose. So you could say phase one is, in one sense, go to the West, attract Western people, have people become devotees all over the world. But then Prabhupada also said, in this particular strategy, which Prabhupada said that dancing white elephants, that you know, we go to the West, attract Western people to become devotees, and when they come to India, Indians will be impressed by that. Indians are inspired by that. So as far as I have seen, this is Bhakti Sanskar Thakur himself does not use the dancing white elephants metaphor. That Bhakti Sanskar Thakur's desire was that preach in the Western world, share Krishna Bhakti all over. But Prabhupada's vision was not just share in the West, but bring that back to India. Bring the Westerns to India and create a Bhakti Renaissance in India. So this is first class servitorship. What is first class servitorship? Yes, follow the instruction, but don't just restrict yourself to following the instruction alone. Why is this instruction given? What is to be done through this instruction? So that is, in one sense, the highest level. Understand the intent. Now, is this speculation? Well, that's why this is not something which can be done prematurely. So if somebody is habituated to the third level, they never follow instructions. And one day they start doing something else and they say, actually, I've understood the heart of my spiritual master and I'm doing that. Well, you can't jump from the third level to the first level without going through the second level. So we have to be at the second level for some time where we diligently follow the instructions of the spiritual master. We follow the letter. It is important. But after we follow the letter, then we start understanding, okay, what is it that I can do? And how can I assist in the spiritual master's mission? So you could say that is being proactive in bhakti. So there are two kinds of niyama agraha. One is niyam agraha, that reject the rule itself. So that will be the third level. Just reject everything. And niyam agraha, that is insisting on the rule itself, insisting on the letter itself. That could be that somebody can stay stuck at the second level. So first level means go beyond Niyamagraha. So Nityananda Prabhu, he demonstrated that. So at one level, I talked about the previous verse, he followed a difficult instruction. The difficult instruction is that enter into Grahastha Ashram. But there are many ways in which the sweetness of the reciprocation, I said that I'll be talking about the relationship between Nityananda Prabhu and Mahaprabhu. So the sweetness of that relationship was, you could say there is irritating disobedience and there is delightful disobedience. So delightful disobedience means what? That delightful disobedience is like an oxymoron. Oxymoron is like you have two opposite words brought together. You know, only a brilliant fool would come up with such an idea. So, you know, are you brilliant or are you foolish? The two opposite ideas, how do they come together? So, that is oxymoron. So, how can disobedience delight? Because if the disobedience is for a higher purpose that is being fulfilled, then that pleases. That pleases the person. So, when Mahaprabhu was living in Puri, at that time, the devotees would come, especially in Chaturmasya, from Mayapur to see Mahaprabhu. Many devotees would earlier come to be a part of the Rath Yatra, but when Mahaprabhu was there, they would come much more in number and they would stay much longer. And Nityananda Prabhu would also come. At that time, Mahaprabhu would tell Nityananda Prabhu, you have much work to do in Bengal. You have so many people to deliver. So, no need for you to come and spend 4 months here. So, every year, when Mahaprabhu was seeing off the devotees, he would tell this to Nityananda Prabhu. And Nityananda Prabhu would be non-committal. And next year, unfailingly, Nityananda Prabhu would be back. And when Mahaprabhu would see Nityananda Prabhu, they would embrace and they would be so happy. And when he would go, don't come next year. And he'd come next year, Mahaprabhu would be happy again. So, in one sense, you know, there is this tension. See, what happens is, Mahaprabhu, especially when he is in Puri, in the Antilila, Mahaprabhu is actually doing outreach through inreach. What do I mean by that? See, outreach, we sometimes think of that means, you know, go out and reach out to new people and bring them to bhakti. Yeah, that is important, no doubt. At the same time, what happens after they start practicing bhakti? You know, it's important at that time also. So Prabhupada says in the Nectar of Instruction that the Krishna consciousness movement is nourished by the sixfold loving exchanges among devotees. Tadati pratigrahanati guhyam akhyati pruchyati bhungte bhojayate chaiva. So if we see in the Antilila, mostly, at least the first 10 chapters, in the last 10 chapters, Mahaprabhu is mostly in internal ecstasy. He's just absorbed in the mood of Radharani. But in the first 10 chapters, it's his second meeting with Rupa Goswami, his second meeting with Sanatana Goswami, his meeting with Raghunath Das Goswami, his meeting with Raghunath Bhatta Goswami, his assisting Ridhas Thakur in departing, his interactions with Vallabh Bhatta and others. So there are basically he's demonstrating the sixfold loving exchanges. So what is Mahaprabhu doing? Mahaprabhu is at one place. He's not traveling and preaching. But he is entering deeper and deeper into the hearts of those who are traveling and preaching. So he enters through his sweet loving reciprocations with the Goswamis, with his Aparish associates. He's doing inreach. He's entering deeper and deeper into their hearts. And then they will do outreach. They will reach out to more and more people. So here, in one sense, there's a tension between outreach and inreach. Nityananda Prabhu will do outreach. He's going out to go and more people. But what Mahaprabhu is also demonstrating inreach. So he would have very sweet, loving reciprocations with Nityananda Prabhu whenever Nityananda Prabhu would visit. So this disobedience is actually delightful. Because Mahaprabhu's mood was, have wonderful exchanges with devotees. And his mood was also that, share Krishna Bhakti with others. So he would say, when he's going, okay, no, you don't come. But when he'd come, Mahaprabhu would be so happy. And they would have loving exchanges. Well, I'm not sure about that. I can check it out. So only come only once? Is it? Oh, okay. Thank you for the clarification. And even that one disobedience is delightful. Mahaprabhu was pleased by that. So, when the interaction was happening, what would happen is that Nityananda Prabhu, even when he was not following the words of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, what was he doing? He was fulfilling the heart of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So, his first class servitorship. Now, there are many other occasions where Nityananda Prabhu seems to be above the letter of the law. But although he was above the letter of the law, he was fulfilling the purpose of the law. So that is his greatness. That's first class servitorship. So let's move to the last part now. So as he was activating the tradition of glorifying Mahaprabhu. It's one thing to say glorify the Lord ourselves, and that's wonderful. However, if we want that that Mahaprabhu's mercy keeps spreading, then a legacy has to be created. And the legacy has to be created for that purpose. It is not just I who glorify, but I inspire others to glorify. And who knows, others may glorify more than me also. So how much can we inspire others? You know, it is said about Prabhupada that he was a touchstone. Oh, when a touchstone, anybody comes in contact with it, it's transformed into gold. But Prabhupada was not just a touchstone who transformed ordinary objects into gold. But Prabhupada is a touchstone who created not just gold but other touchstones. That those who came in contact with those who had come in contact with Prabhupada, they were also infused with Krishna Bhakti. So this is how he created a legacy. And the legacy is created in many different ways. We know that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself, he had prominent followers from whom there's Nityananda Parivar, there's Advaita Parivar. They are how the Gaudiya Vaishnava tradition continued on. Now, the prominent biographers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So, when he inspired others to glorify Lord Chaitanya, he was the primary inspirer for Vrindavan Das Thakur to write the Chaitanya Bhagavat. And he was also the person who was an inspirer for Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami to write the Chaitanya Charitamrita. So, through these books, the memory of Mahaprabhu, his pastimes, his teachings, his glories, has continued on for posterity. And this was vital. In one sense, because Mahaprabhu himself did not write any books. Keeping his memory alive was extremely important. Just like now, when Prabhupada departed from the world, the Prabhupada disciples who speak Prabhupada Katha. And that's wonderful. But that Prabhupada Katha needs to be preserved for future generations. So nowadays, we can have recordings. In the past, there were no audio recordings or video recordings. So if you have to record and preserve, that means writing. And writing was not easy. Writing is, because at that time, there's no printing press, no computers. If you just want to rewrite one thing, you complete one page. Nowadays, if you want to edit one page, in one word, you can easily edit one word. But in the past, if you want to change one word, that means you have to rewrite the entire page again. And that means you need the page separately. You need to get some tree bark or something like that and then get the ink. Writing was laborious. And that's why writing was not widely done. Books were primarily written by scholars for scholars. So most people learned through the oral tradition. So, and the oral tradition was very vibrant. After Mahaprabhu departed, even when he departed from Bengal to Puri, the devotees were filled. People in general were also widely aware of the glories of Mahaprabhu. And they would be discussing about him. But writing, it didn't happen so much. Now, of course, Murari Gupta had his karchas. But those are, you could say, like an outline biography. It's like, it's more like a diary than a book. It is not to minimize what he has written. It is important, very important. It's like the foundational, his record of what he has given. But the primary biographies were written by, the first was written by Vrindavan Das Thakur. And you can say, the last was written by Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami. I've discussed separately about, how each of these biographies played a very significant role. And especially, Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami's it's not just a biography, it's a book of theology in the format of a biography. And through this, what has happened is he has preserved the legacy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. In general, what happens is, for legacy to be lasting, see, no matter how glorious an event, if that is not recorded, if that is not glorified, if it is not shared, then it will be lost in history. So things, we humans are limited beings. We are at a particular place in geography and at a particular time in history. And that is just the nature of our finite existence. So when something happens at a particular place, it's like you put a stone in a still body of water, in a pond or a well. It creates ripples. So normally speaking, we can say that how many ripples are created depends on how big the stone is. Bigger the stone, the bigger will be the ripples. Well, that is true at one level. At another level, so if some event is very big, so if you consider the fabric of space and time, that's like a still pond in which a stone falls. And a stone falls, that means it's like some event has happened. So how much will be the ripples of that event? How much will that event spread? That depends on how momentous the event is. So the bigger the stone, the greater the ripple. So bigger the event, more the new world will spread far and wide. That is true at one level. So that is true in one sense. But in another sense, actually, the size of the stone determines the size of the ripples. But in another sense, the size of the ripples determine the size of the sound, size of the stone. This is how actually things work in reality. That means that the stone metaphor, stone ripple metaphor is not accurate, because the more an event is propagated, the more that event seems to be very big. So if an event's news spreads far and wide, the event might have been small, but the very fact the news has gone far and wide, that means that what has happened is that event is considered to be very big. So this principle actually applies even more in today's world, where visibility determines reach, determines size, determines reach. How visible you are, that much you can reach out. So this, the continuation of the Gaudiya Vaishnava tradition that happened through Nityananda Prabhu's inspiration. In one sense, when Mahaprabhu departed, he was relatively young and he departed suddenly. He didn't write down a will. He did not formalize a way to continue the legacy. That was done by Nityananda Prabhu. And now we can say that, so he inspired Vrindavan Das Thakur so much. Vrindavan Das Thakur's book is there are pastimes of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, but there are many chapters describing Nityananda Prabhu's glories. In fact, apart from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the one character on whom there are maximum chapters in Chaitanya Bhagavat is Nityananda Prabhu. And he is so great, his devotion to Nityananda Prabhu is so great, that he says if anybody accepts Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and doesn't accept Nityananda Prabhu, I will go and attack that person. He says, I'll punch that person, kick that person. He says, is this intolerance? How dare you not do that? How is this? It's not intolerance. It's actually compassion. It's affection. His mood is that Nityananda Prabhu is so merciful. How can you reject such mercy? How can you deprive yourself of such mercy? And the idea is that he has that confidence that, okay, even if I offend someone, that person will get angry and that person will go to my master. And just by going to my master, your servant did like this. Okay, they will interact with my master, and by that interaction with my master, they will get mercy. So sometimes in social media nowadays they say, any publicity is good publicity. Even if it is bad publicity, at least it is publicity. So especially some people who are celebrities, for them, they say that their idea is that to be praised is good, to be criticized maybe say is bad, but far worse in being criticized is to be neglected, to be forgotten. So if you can't be praised, be criticized. At least you are in the limelight by that. At least you are visible. Well, it is not easy, but sometimes people, those who are celebrities, they themselves create scandals so that if they can't do something good, they will do something bad and they will stay in the news. So that is, of course, you could say a distorted or a perverted reflection of what Vrindavan Das Thakur's mood is. He has so much faith in the compassion of Nityananda Prabhu that he just can't accept that. How can anyone not have faith in Nityananda Prabhu? And if they don't have faith, his anger at them, because of that anger, they will go to Nityananda Prabhu and Nityananda Prabhu's compassion will work magic. So that is the conviction in the glory of Nityananda Prabhu that is there in Vrindavan Das Thakur's heart. And what is Vrindavan Das Thakur ultimately doing? He's glorifying Mahaprabhu through his Chaitanya Bhagavat. So this is Vrindavan Das Thakur's, this is Chaitanya Prabhu's legacy also, that he inspired the devotee scholars to write books. Now, if you see Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, in Chaitanya Charitamrita, there are not many pastimes of Nityananda Prabhu. There is one chapter devoted to Nityananda Prabhu in the Adilila, where it is describing the branch of the tree, the branch of Nityananda Prabhu is described. Now, why is that? Is it because there is not affection toward Nityananda Prabhu? Not at all. It is not because he didn't want to glorify Nityananda Prabhu. It was more of a pragmatic reason than a devotional indifference. The pragmatic reason was that he was already very aged, and because he was so aged, so he couldn't. This book has already become quite big. It's 24,000 verses. So he didn't want to lengthen Chaitanya. He wanted to complete the pastimes, and he also didn't want to simply. He didn't want to repeat the pastime that Vrindavan Das Thakur had told. So that's why he does not speak so much about Nityananda Prabhu. But right in the beginning, in the chapter on Nityananda Prabhu itself, he describes it by Nityananda Prabhu's mercy that I was able to write this chapter. So I would write this book actually. So that tradition is continued on. And not only that, immediate successors of Mahaprabhu, the immediate generation, but it's by Nityananda Prabhu's mercy that we have His divine grace, Isi Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Now, Prabhupada considered Nityananda Prabhu to be quite central in the canon of Gaudiya Vaishnavism. And if you see many traditional Gaudiya temples, so they have Gaura Gadadhara deities. But it was Mahachila Prabhupada who, on our altars, he had Gaura Nitai. And what was the reason? He says, Gaura Gadadhar, if you consider Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to Krishna and Gadadhar to be Radharani, then there is this divine couple relishing. And Prabhupada had that in the form of Radha Krishna. But Prabhupada said, we need the mercy of Nityananda Prabhu. The whole world is like today filled with Jagais and Madais. And therefore, Prabhupada had Nityananda Prabhu put on the central altar. So we have Gaura Nitai deities. And especially when Prabhupada, I think, traveled to South America for the first time. And when he went there, at that time, even there were already Gaura Nitai deities over there. And there were a whole temple hall filled with devotees, all doing kirtans. And when Prabhupada saw Gaura Nitai deities, Prabhupada offered prostrated obeisances. And when Prabhupada started speaking at that time, Prabhupada usually concealed his ecstasy. You know, but there are some times when the ecstasy just couldn't be concealed. And Prabhupada, Parama Karuna Pahu Dui Jana, Prabhupada started singing that song, glorifying Gaura Nitai. And he says, they are so merciful. Just take shelter of them. They will deliver you. So Prabhupada was overwhelmed by ecstasy. So just as Nityananda Prabhu had that adventurous spirit of sharing Krishna Bhakti, he activated the tradition. And the most widespread influence in spreading Mahaprabhu's glories was done through Srila Prabhupada. And Srila Prabhupada acknowledged his debt, his disembodied, by having Nityananda Prabhu in the center on the altar. So it is, in one sense, Nityananda Prabhu's mercy that we have Srila Prabhupada, and Srila Prabhupada's mercy that we have Nityananda Prabhu on the altar. And in one sense, it is in their divine glorification. We all can be accidental beneficiaries. That is, Nityananda Prabhu wants to, through Srila Prabhupada, reach out to more and more and more people. And Prabhupada wants to take Nityananda Prabhu's mercy, by Nityananda Prabhu's mercy, spread Mahaprabhu's message and Mahaprabhu's mission far and wide. And if somehow, you know, it's like sometimes two people get caught in the crossfire. Two people are fighting and somebody gets caught in the crossfire. That's unfortunate. You may be hit from here, you may be hit from there. But, you know, there is a crossfire of danger and there is a crossfire of mercy. Crossfire of mercy means there is Nityananda Prabhu who wants to spread Mahaprabhu's glories, and there's Prabhupada who wants to fulfill Nityananda Prabhu's mission, Nityananda Prabhu's mercy, and spread it further. And if we can come in between, we can get mercy from Nityananda Prabhu, we can get mercy from Prabhupada, and in that crossfire of mercy, we can be purified and empowered to do our part, small or big, in the mission of Mahaprabhu, by Nityananda Prabhu's mercy and by Srila Prabhupada's mercy. So I'll summarize what we discussed today. I discussed four ways Nityananda Prabhu glorifies Chaitanya Mahaprabhu with the acronym PADA. Does anyone remember what is P? Pursuing fallen souls, the most fallen souls. That he became, when he heard about Jagai and Mada, he became, it's an adventurous compassion. How can I deliver them? So yes, if there are students who are already toppers and you take them to IIT, that's great. But students who are failures and take them to IIT, that's really great training. So Nityananda Prabhu did that. And generally our love is seen by what we put at stake. So Nityananda Prabhu risked injury, actually sustained injury, and even wagered his own piety to deliver Jagai and Madai. And similarly, he delivered the thieves, and he created a whole legacy of thieves, a party for outreach to robbers. So reaching out to the most fallen, Srila Prabhupada did the same thing by going out in the Western world and reaching out to people who were normally not at all considered to be receptive to spirituality. What was A? Do you remember? Yeah, thank you. Abiding by difficult instructions. So it is, for him, he was already renounced. He had given up the world in his early teens, the age of 12. But from then, Mahaprabhu told him to enter into the Grihastha Ashram. And he did that. So why was that? Because Mahaprabhu Sannyasi could reach to some people, but as a Grihastha, he could reach to far more people. And not only did he Nityananda Prabhu reach out to many people, but he also created a legacy through his family, by which Mahaprabhu's movement continued on. And we discussed that he was not sannyasi. He had renounced the world, but he was not technically a sannyasi. So almost like a brahmachari. From brahmachari avadhut, he became a grahastha avadhut. Then next was D was demonstrating first class servitorship. Thank you. That was even when sometimes he would just not do what Mahaprabhu would tell him. Mahaprabhu would tell him, don't come, and yet he would come. That's because he wanted to have this is the outreach, share Krishna Bhakti far and wide, but the inreach is have delightful loving exchanges. So there is first class obedience means understand the inner mood and fulfill that mood, not just stick to the letter of the law. So Prabhupada also demonstrated first class servitorship, that actually Prabhupada went to the West as per spiritual master's instruction. So that was like, even I was also drawing a parallel between Prabhupada PADA. Prabhupada also followed a difficult instruction of going to the West, even though he had no support at all. He followed a difficult instruction. But then, he was to create a lasting foundation for Krishna consciousness movement, he focused on India. That is my desire, Prabhupada said. It is not defiance, but you could say it is transcendence to obedience or delightful disobedience. And the last A was us activating a tradition for glorifying Mahaprabhu. That is especially through the authors. So both Vrindavan Das Thakur and Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami were inspired significantly by Nityananda Prabhu. And that's how the event, the Mahaprabhu's momentous appearance and activities, that was the stone which fell, the ripples went on and on because of the literature that was written. And that same tradition was continued on with extraordinary effectiveness by Srila Prabhupada. So we can be caught in the delightful crossfire of mercy between Nityananda Prabhu and Srila Prabhupada and be devotionally enriched thereby. So let's conclude with one quick prayer. We'll recite this together. Nityanandam aham naumi, sarvananda karam param, harinama pradam devam, avadhuta shiromanim. So Lord Nityananda, I offer obeisances. Nityanandam aham naumi. Sarvananda karam param. He gives the supreme happiness. All kinds of happiness he provides. He is param. He is the supreme Lord. How does he do this? Harinama pradam devam. He is that divine personality who shares the harinam. And he is avadhuta shiromani, the greatest among the avadhutas. Shri Nityananda prabhu ki. Nityananda avirbhav mahamahotsav ki. Shri Prabhupada ki, Gaur Bhakta Vrinda ki, Itai Gaur Premanande. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna, thank you very much, Chaitanya Charan Prabhu, for wonderful sharing. So we want to announce that from tomorrow, apart from the morning Bhagavatam class, we are also starting from 10:30 a.m. to 12:30 in the afternoon at Radha Damodar Temple, Monday to Thursday, Bhakti Vaibhav lecture series, and this is going to be given by different devotees. So anyone who wishes to attend can participate. 10:30 to 12:30 at Radha Damodar Temple, courtyard. And Monday to Thursday, this will happen. And those who wish to get certified in Bhakti Vaibhav can do so. And the first series of lectures is going to be inaugurated by Abhimanyu Pran Prabhu from tomorrow. Hari Bol. So all the brahmacharis or whoever wishes to attend from the community are most welcome to participate. Hare Krishna.